Hi. So, just a quick introduction to all my pre-existing supporters who are listening to this. You might not know, but it was a bit of a hoo-ha with this podcast. Took a strange turn of events near the end. Don't ask me how I got into this pickle. But anyway, for those of you who are joining from Twitter, who can't wait to hear this podcast, I just want to make it very clear, this is a completely unedited and the complete version of the podcast. I didn't do anything to it. And actually, it was my guest who said you can cut bits out and edit them out, as you will hear. And I said no. I really enjoyed most of this podcast. Maybe not so much the last 5-10 minutes. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. I hope that's piqued all of your interests and you will stay to the bitter end. And I'll maybe add some commentary at the end. All right, folks. Enjoy this podcast with Chris. Billboard Chris.
I feel like I'm off center when I'm in the middle.
Yeah, I'm like that as well. Here, there you go. I'm better as well now. So yeah, basically, I normally use a platform called Riverside. And guess what? Yesterday, it just crashed and it just said you cannot record anymore. So I've been trying for the last 10 hours to get it fixed with their support, and they keep emailing and saying, you know, have you tried this, have you tried that? And I've been quite stressed about it. I actually woke up in the middle of the night trying to see if it was working, if they'd emailed me back to see if it was working, like 3 a.m. and they said no.
Oh no,
still working on it. So I was hoping magically this morning it would work, and it wasn't. That's why I'm using StreamYard instead. But anyway, listen, I don't know, Chris, Billboard Chris, if you know much about me, but when I do a podcast, it's a conversation like two guys down in the pub having a chat. I can be a little bit sarcastic and jokey, so just be aware, because sometimes you Americans don't get that, and you're like...
Well, I'm Canadian.
Oh.
My dad's from England, and yeah, don't worry about that one bit.
All right, okay. Well, listen, tell me, listen, what are you doing traipsing around the world in North America with a billboard? Have you got nothing better to do?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a dad of two girls. I'm a husband as well, of course. My girls are 12 and 14, but for almost 4 years, I've been on this mission to raise awareness about what is undoubtedly the greatest child abuse scandal in modern medicine history. The business of trying to change the sex of children, and it's mostly girls who are affected by this. So back in 2019, I started learning all about this. I stumbled upon it, I think, on Twitter. And I saw this term, puberty blockers, and I said to myself, that doesn't sound good. What the heck are those? And of course, most people know all about this now. These are drugs given to kids to stop their bodies from developing in their natural puberty. That's totally nuts. And this world has been going downhill for a while in the West. I don't like it. I used to be a financial advisor, so I had to pay attention to all this stuff. But this was just a step too far, and I decided I couldn't tolerate this anymore. So I decided to take a stand, and I go outside. I have conversations with people, and I started traveling all across Canada. The first thing I did was put up actual billboards, which is where my nickname comes from. Put up a billboard that said, I love J.K. Rowling, following the lead of Posey Parker in the UK, who put up a sign at the Edinburgh train station that said, I love J.K. Rowling. It got taken down after days because some people online said it was hate speech. So part of this for me also is freedom of speech. We should be able to talk about anything. And on this subject, we should be talking about it a lot, because hundreds of thousands of kids are coming to harm. So I put up a big billboard that said the same thing in Vancouver. It also got taken down. Then I did a bunch more in the States. And then because no sign companies would work with me, I just became a billboard, because they can take down a big one off the side of the street, but they can't take a sign off my back.
Mm. Man, I'm going to go into a lot of what you just said. You know, I don't know if you know, but I was actually referred to my licensing board for being transphobic. I'm not scared of trans people. And it's ridiculous. You know, I'm standing up for medical ethics as a former surgeon. You know, I've consented patients for 25 years, and I was very upset about the COVID vaccines. Then I was upset about the trans issue, the puberty blockers, the surgery. I don't think you can give these kids informed consent. This is
Of course.
We're abusing and enabling these young children. So anyway, you know, I was talking on Twitter. I was like, you know, giving examples like, you know, this young Indian village girl identifies as a Viking, or this blood-soaked lion identifies as a vegetarian. And, you know, I was putting up these provocative pictures because sometimes I think you need a slap in the face to say, you know, you can identify as anything you like, but, you know, it doesn't change reality. Anyway, based on these tweets, I had anonymous complaints, apparently. And my medical director referred me to, you know, the licensing board. And another hospital used the fact that I was referred and didn't notify them as an excuse to kick me out. And so, you know, here I am 25 years, you know, into my career, and I've lost my ability to practice now as a surgeon.
They took your license away for...
They didn't take my license away. After the investigation, they said there's nothing to see here. It is controversial, and he is, you know, conspiratorial, and we understand your concerns about him, but there's no fitness to practice. But the hospitals withdrew their practicing privileges. So a surgeon without an operating theater is pretty hopeless. I'm not able to practice anywhere. No one wants me. So anyway, moving back to you though, right? We're going to talk about the whole trans issue and the puberty blockers and Tavistock and all that kind of stuff in a second. But listen, did you not get the memo? Did you not get the memo? You're meant to be this weak, emasculated guy who cherry vapes and watches little TikTok videos of, you know, little kids dancing. I mean, that's what you're meant to be doing right now, mister. What the hell are you doing? You don't get the memo?
Yeah, I'm a lowly soldier out on the streets of this culture war, because that's what it is. This is every bit as much a war as any other war we fought in the past. It's just not fought in the trenches and with bayonets. It's fought with our minds and with our words. Our weapons are our words. And we got to wake this culture up, because it's being destroyed from within. And I'm not cool with it. All I care about is my kids, the future I leave for them. This is what happens with parents. They lose all their selfish ambitions in life, or good ones anyway. And then your life becomes about the legacy you leave for your kids. So I had a good life growing up. I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 75. 80s and 90s were great. And there's so much going on today. Of course, the rapid technological change, we've seen more change in how humans live their lives in these last two generations than we saw in all generations previously combined, probably. And it's just going to keep accelerating that way. And without some sort of ethical framework, some moral framework to guide humanity, we're a total disaster waiting to happen. It's going to happen anyway, but we can at least do our bit to try to prevent as much of that as possible. And that starts by stopping childhood sex changes, because there's no such thing as a child being born wrong. It's the most psychologically abusive thing I've ever heard in my life. And it's the left pushing this, the people who are supposed to be standing up for those who are trodden on, those who are less adapted, those who are weak and not spoken for. It's the left telling these kids, oh, you don't like your body? Let's change it. What's up with that?
No, the left has lost the plot. The left used to be peaceniks, and now they're like warmongers. But listen, dude, guess what? Dude, you're my brother, man. So not only am I a father to two daughters, for similar age gap, they're 9 and 7, soon to be 9 and then 7, but I've got a little boy as well who's 5. Not only do we share the same haircut.
Nice.
I'm of that really vintage year, that, you know, that beautiful vintage year of 75 as well, mate.
Are you really?
Oh yeah, baby. And I'm telling you, I say this on my podcast too. I love the 80s. I'm a child of the 80s, you know, watching Transformers and the A-Team and you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just, and He-Man, just life was good, man. I was just, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of crap going on in the world, and there's a lot of, you know,
for sure.
You know, I've now looked back, and, you know, things have been going on for a very long time. But, you know, our parents enjoyed a certain degree of standard of living. There was just common sense in the world. And all the bad stuff seemed to be happening in other countries. You know, things are good.
That's right. Remember? And we brought those things to our countries, and we did it willingly.
Yeah.
And we're still doing it. So we should stop that.
We should definitely stop that.
There's such a thing as nations with borders. And this whole globalism thing just isn't working.
It's not.
That's not racist. It's just You're the prime minister of your country, not all the other countries. That does not work. And anyway, yeah, we're committing suicide as prosperous nations. It didn't have to be like this.
So I actually stood for the Brexit party, and I was accused of being a racist. Just look at my skin color and name.
Of course, yeah.
I was accused of being a white supremacist. It was quite funny. Because again, just like what you're saying, I was against this drive towards globalization and supranational bodies that are undemocratic. But, you know, I don't even know if we really have imported any of this from abroad. I don't know any other country that has a shit show clown world kind of like ideology. I think we've done this to ourselves. People who are controlling our politicians are designing this. You know, you look at the Soros Foundation and Bill and Melinda Gates, the WHO, and it goes on and on. There's weird, and Tavistock. Tavistock is British, you know, the Tavistock Foundation. And these are British. These are our institutions. They're creating this weird ideology that is destroying us from within. I don't know if you know, but the Tavistock place, they had this gender, I can't remember the full name, clinic, gender
something. Identity service.
That's it. And basically, you know, they were going ahead and pushing puberty blockers and basically experimenting on young children. There was a big scandal. There was a whistleblower. The whistleblower got into trouble, of course. And then apparently the Tavistock thing, the center got closed down. The person leading it, you know, the doctors didn't get punished, didn't get referred to the GMC, you know, didn't get a slap on their wrist. And they just got rebranding. And there's a bit of shuffling around of the personnel. Most of the personnel are still there. And guess what? Oh, the door's open again. And it's business as usual. I mean, I think this is what drives me crazy as an ethical surgeon, where when you speak out and do the right thing, you get censored, delicensed, and punished. But if you mutilate young children, you know, destroy their future, their health, and their ability to have sex as adults, their ability to reproduce, the fact that depression and psychological problems are higher afterwards, you get rewarded. You get promoted upwards. Doesn't that make you just so mad?
Activism and politics are leading the medical field. So at the Tavistock, a lot of the guidelines that were put in place were kind of demanded by Mermaids, this radical left charity in the UK pushing LGBTQ whatever. And of course, it's leftist political parties. But in the UK, it's a bit different. In North America, it's really unanimously pushed by the left. UK, I know the conservatives were pushing some of this, virtue signaling, whatever. It was kind of a mix more. But this is ultimately pushed by the left. Sometimes they confuse people along the way and get them to come along with it. But this is all ideology. There's nothing scientific about it. This goes back to the 50s and 60s. The term gender identity wasn't used until the 60s. John Hopkins really popularized this, John Money at Johns Hopkins University. And this idea of gender identities kind of floated around academia for decades, and it wasn't affecting a whole lot of people. Gender dysphoria, or as it used to be called, gender identity disorder, affected one out of maybe 30,000 kids, mostly boys. But when gay rights were won, you know, all across the West, really around 2010, I'd say that fight was over. All these charities, all these nonprofits, they turn their focus from gay rights to the new civil rights movement, which is really a mental illness turned into a civil rights movement, gender dysphoria, transgenderism. And so now all the money and all the efforts went towards this. And if anyone were to speak up about it, as you've experienced yourself, my gosh, now you're a bigot. And they conflate gay with trans. They put all these letters together for a reason, because you're not allowed to say anything about any of it.
Yeah.
But that's wrong. We should be able to talk about anything. This has got nothing to do with being gay, except a lot of these kids would grow up to be gay, and now they're being sterilized.
Absolutely. If anything, this is homophobic.
100%. This is conversion therapy of I don't call them gay kids, because I don't think we should attach sexuality to kids.
Mm-hmm.
But this is absolutely conversion therapy. Majority of these kids historically with gender dysphoria grew up to be gay. Now we're telling them they're trans, that they're born wrong, that they'll only find true happiness by transitioning. All these kids have mental health comorbidities going on. They're sad, they're depressed, they're anxious. They've been sexually abused. A huge number, probably a majority, have been sexually abused. A majority are on the autism spectrum. At the Tavistock, 35% of the kids had moderate to severe autism. That doesn't include the mild cases. I talk to parents all the time. It's autism, autism, autism. These are just struggling kids with problems. Those problems don't go away just because you put someone on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones or do a double mastectomy. They have the same problems, and now they're sterilized and mutilated.
Absolutely. Chris, isn't it really sad that you're spending money and time away from your beautiful family, as an activist now, campaigning against this ridiculous, mutilation and Frankenstein surgery that's taking place. And me speaking out and trying to do the right thing and try to hold on to, the values of, medical ethics and do no harm, principal tenant. Mm-hmm. And we're doing this. It's not because I'm some grifter, not because you're some grifter. Because you want to be,
you're losing out so much money,
dude. Big time.
Saying the truth, you're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mate, honestly, I work 7 days a week now. I used to work 2.5 days a week. I earn an eighth of what I earn. I can barely pay off the mortgage, right? And I get accused of being a grifter. But let's go back to you and me. We're doing this fundamentally because we care. We care about our daughters, our children, other people's children. We care about humanity. And also, we grew up in the 80s. I mean, can you imagine if you were in school right now, go back to 1983 or 84, and you said to your teacher, "Miss, there's only two sexies, a boy or a girl." Your teacher would have looked at you and, "This isn't a special needs class. Yeah, well done. Great. Would you want a sticker? You want a well done?" I mean, it's, we grew up in an era of common sense. Like, we just knew. And I think a lot of it is we care so much about these young kids, and we also care about the truth. We care about honesty, and we won't accept this. We won't accept these lies. Like, we're not physically, but we're being socially engineered by having a gun to our head. If you do not comply, you're going to be losing your job. You're going to lose your license. You're going to lose your reputation. We're going to cancel you. And we're like, no, well, it doesn't matter. We will not comply with this BS. But the funny thing is, we care and get punished and ridiculed. I really am upset with the medical field because obviously that I come from there. But you can get upset with the, you can also get upset with the politicians and the Hollywood celebrities with their kids who are now trans. The boys, they're dressing up as girls. I think that's sick. But I'm really, really upset with the medical profession, the doctors who are carrying out the surgery, dishing out the puberty blockers. There's something really evil going on and sick.
Yeah, it is. It's evil. And we're the last generation that grew up pretty much in normal life before the internet. We're the last generation before kids really started growing up on the internet. Dr. Phil gave this talk on Joe Rogan where he had a great line. He said in around 2010, kids stopped living their own lives and they started watching other kids live their lives.
Mm.
And we have a frame of reference for how life is supposed to be, where all the kids are outside playing with each other.
Yeah.
As it was for thousands of years. On my street where I grew up, there were kids in every house, virtually every house, probably 4 out of 5. And we were all playing outside all the time.
Yep.
Literally, when the streetlights came on, that's when we had to be home.
Yeah.
And that's like all species. Look at any other species. It's through play that kids learn and socialize and roughhousing and all that sort of stuff. That's not happening anymore. It is with some kids, of course, but it's totally different how kids are being raised. And there are, unfortunately, so many kids who don't get outside, period. They're playing video games 8 hours a day. They have no friends. All their friends are online. And for these vulnerable kids, it's these other kids online who are sucking them into this cult. And I call it a cult because it is a cult. It has all the hallmarks of a cult. Look up the basics of all cults. It matches every single one. The people who are in it self-police their own thoughts. They don't allow themselves to look at the truth. They automatically reject the truth if anyone brings it to them, but they have no curiosity to even look at it. Because if they dared to look at the truth, it would destroy their entire social circle, all their current belief system. It's too much for them to confront, especially for these parents who are doing this to their kids. They would have to acknowledge that they're committing child abuse. They never will, so they'll use all their intelligence possible to justify what they're doing. And then over all these years, this really goes way back probably to the 60s, to the sexual revolution, but leftism has just been chipping away, getting people into institutions of power, taking over all the universities, getting people elected onto the boards of these medical bodies.
Yeah.
And you end up with these activists running medical institutions. The American Academy of Pediatrics, it's run by activists. It's not a science org. It's really an activist body. And the man at the helm is just a pure activist who doesn't care about the truth. He doesn't care about the Cass report that just came out. This 388-page report in the UK from Dr. Hilary Cass, from a 3.5-year most thorough review that's ever been done. They don't care about it. They just look for reasons to discredit it and for talking points to use with the media. And how can you have people running medical organizations that don't care about the truth when it comes to medicine? It's a disgrace, but this is what's happened. It's activists in all these powerful roles, and it's up to people like me, a financial advisor, to go out on the street and talk to people, because almost no doctors would talk about it either. You, of course, have. You've paid a huge price for it, but that's why other doctors won't pay that price, because they don't want to lose their $300,000 or $400,000 a year job. They have huge mortgages. They have lifestyles that revolve around the amount of money they're making, and they would have to give that up. So hardly any of them ever say anything, which is why it's really fallen on largely parents, moms and dads, normal people, to get educated about this and to blow the whistle on it. Thankfully, we're seeing more people like yourself speak out now.
I know, mate. So I don't know if you've, hold on one sec. I just want to show you something. Can you see this? One of my listeners made this for me. It was from a podcast interview that I was giving. So I said, when they say first do no harm, and I'm talking about doctors, what they actually mean is do no harm to my license, do no harm to my income, do no harm to my reputation, do no harm to my standing in the community, do no harm to my career, do no harm to my mistress. Do no harm to my holidays. Do no harm to my kids' private schooling. And maybe then, if it comes down to it, do no harm to my patients. But only if I'm sticking to the guidelines. That's the problem we've got, buddy.
Guidelines written by trans activists. Guidelines written by people who themselves are in the cult.
Yeah.
The WPATH guidelines. The president of WPATH is a man who thinks he's a woman. I'm sorry, but these people shouldn't be writing the standards of care, because they're not coming at this from an objective viewpoint. It's entirely subjective, based on their own feelings.
Mm.
When I talk to these people, and I talk to trans-identified people all the time, they come up to me on the street, they come up to me at universities. Probably 4 out of 5 of them would tell me that if they didn't get these drugs or these hormones when they were younger, they would have killed themselves. They all say this.
Mm.
Can we trust that? No. The data doesn't back it up. The only data we have on kids just came out of Finland about a month ago, where they did a 23-year study. They looked at 23 years worth of data, 1996 to 2019. More than 2,000 kids went to the gender clinic, and the majority of those kids didn't get puberty blockers, because they weren't even doing them back then. Majority didn't get cross-sex hormones. They were doing more assessments and psychotherapy and just watchful waiting back in the day. But those kids weren't all killing themselves. And they compared them to a control group of more than 17,000 kids. There were 7 suicides from the 2,000 kids who went to the gender clinic over 23 years. 1 every 3 years. It worked out to an annualized rate of 0.051%. So 1 out of 2,000 of these struggling kids were committing suicide. Every suicide is a tragedy. But those numbers are similar to the control group. And the common denominator was the kids in the control group who committed suicide also obviously had mental health difficulties going on, which they can look at by numbers of visits to psychiatrists or whatever. So the problem wasn't gender. Mm. It wasn't this myth that a child is born in the wrong body. It's other issues going on. But they use this lie in every single conversation when they're pushing this. They say, well, kids are going to kill themselves. Would you rather have a live daughter or a dead son? Mom and dad, who know nothing about this, who are sitting in a gender clinic talking to some coercive, manipulative child abuser. 100%. And they're scared because their child's struggling. And they go along with it. But it's not true. And these people should be facing long prison sentences for what they're doing to these kids.
Absolutely. I think even more than that, honestly. And the thing is, the thing is, they couch things and they frame things. The arguments are framed. They have Overton windows. They have straw man arguments. And it's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. Just like you said. I mean, frankly, look, if you think you're in the wrong body, you must be confused. You've got mental health issues. And I'm sorry, with mental health issues, anxiety and depression and whatnot and self-loathing comes suicidal ideation. These people are killing themselves because they're mentally not well, not because they were born in the wrong body. And to flip it and say, oh, it's because they're in the wrong body, they're killing themselves. It's just ridiculous and madness. And the fact is, the fact that we're having to argue against such idiocy is just incredulous. And I find these people are so indoctrinated, you cannot reason with unreasonable people. And these are very unreasonable people. And you know, when you say cult, mate, again, if you listen to my podcast, that word comes up a lot. Okay, so good. I was actually born in a cult in Scotland. So I'm not talking about the religion Islam cult, although some could argue that most major religions are cults. And don't worry, I believe in God and everything. I just think religion's been captured big time. No, I was born in a cult within Islam. So I know all about cults. And right now we're in an era of cults. We live, you know, with the climate change cult, the COVID cult, the trans cult. I mean, it just goes on and on. So you're 100% right. This is the problem. We're trying to cut through the cult. And the problem is with cults as well, it's not just the leadership that you have to contend with, it's the membership. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a cult and you question the leadership, do you know who actually turns against you and makes your life misery? Your fellow cult members. And this is the problem. We're now in a society where, you know, if I tell my doctor colleagues or anybody, you know, this is all nonsense. And they go, are you transphobic? It's like, what? No.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's a wholesale societal problem where either people are scared to speak up or actually have fallen for it. And, you know, I've got too many people coming up to me, too many of my doctor colleagues just privately messaging me or privately telling me, oh, I totally agree with you, I'm with you all the way. But publicly, not there. When I ask them to stand shoulder to shoulder with me, they just disappear. And I think you probably find the same thing. People privately tell you they agree with you, but they're not willing to say it publicly. So you've got this minority activist group, which is drowning out, making you look like a fringe, you know, bigot.
I got two emails last month from urologists, totally unrelated to each other, but professional urologists still in the business. They know exactly this stuff that's happening, but they're too afraid to speak up. And so they're thanking me for speaking up. And I appreciate the email, but at the same time, it's like, you have a lot more power than me. You know, maybe you don't, but you should. You're a professional urologist. And this one person remarked how hypocritical it is because they used to do surgeries on these people with disorders of their sexual development, or what people, I would say, erroneously call intersex disorders. They used to do surgeries on these people without their consent when they were younger, and they know this stuff is wrong or whatever. But anyway, they totally get what's going on. They completely understand the hypocrisy of this situation, but they won't say anything. And it's like you said about the cults. Yes, it's the fellow cult members who turn on you if you challenge the leadership, but it's also, this is a cyclical thing where someone who comes into the cult is themselves a victim, but then in all cults, they become the recruiters.
Yes.
They bring more people into the fold. That's like the number one job of a cult member, is to bring in more people into it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And I've been in a cult too, long time ago. I'm not going to get into it, but I've got my own experience. It was a few decades ago. So I understand the dynamics at play. This is all coming down to basic human psychology about group dynamics and what makes us tick and how do we think and why do people do irrational things. And so there are tactics to help wake people up. But when it comes to these individuals who are in this cult, they can only come out on their own. And they do that by starting to question it themselves. They eventually allow themselves to start questioning it. So the best thing we can do for these people is to ask them questions, say things that they agree with, because then we don't look like such an enemy for example, I'll say to people on the street that are mad at me, there's no right way to be a boy or a girl. They're beautiful just as they are. Mm. You don't need to put them in some stereotypical box. And they'll all agree with that. And they'll get very confused because they have been taught that I'm some bigot against gender nonconformity, which isn't the case. So they get so confused, and that might start them questioning. And maybe in a couple years, they'll come out of it. But ultimately, we don't need to worry about them. We just need to reach the normies, the people in the middle. We need to wake up enough of them, especially moms and dads, because no one cares about kids like a mom or a dad. And they'll take action. They'll become these ferocious mama and papa bears. And it's already happening. We're putting a stop to this all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, this is another common theme, by the way. So I've had several guests on, like Jeff Buys Cars, Dr. Joseph Lee. I've got another guest coming on called Matthew Crawford. We've all been in cults, different cults, Christian cults, Muslim cults, whatever. And I think part of us who speak out, because we've been in it, because we recognize the dangers of cults, we're just willing to speak out. Because once you've been in a cult and left it, you can start spotting them all around you. You're like, oh my goodness. And it might not be labeled a cult, but bloody well is, you know.
Sure. And we don't even have to call it a cult necessarily. Mm. But there are group psychology dynamics in place.
Yeah.
That you'll see this common theme among the most extreme cults and the more minor ones. And then even in political movements or whatever. Humans are a social species, and we don't always use our intelligence to make sense of things and try to understand the truth. We use our intelligence to rationalize our existing biases. And yeah, that's what's happening with this too. Otherwise, smart people are going along with this because they use their intelligence to try to justify it because they can't confront the truth.
100%. So when I look at things and everything in life, I think everything's multifactorial. So let's just take what we're seeing now, this crazy clown world thing with transgender. I think something's not right. So if I speak to some of the doctors like Jay Wrigley, they talk about the estrogenization of our kids, and especially boys. So you've got all these estrogen-like properties in the water, and the food, and the food packaging, and just chemicals all around. And that is affecting our young children. So it's, you know, making our boys more feminine. And, you know, with the girls, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's making them go through puberty quicker. But there's chemical things going on. The diet, if you look at the diet, the vegan diet, the, you know, ultra processed food vegan diet, you know, that is not healthy. Not eating meat. And like I said, the water, the problems with that. So you've got definite chemical, biological influences going on there. We've got a cultural thing going on, this whole Marxist ideology. If you look at the communists, they've got rid of religion, they got rid of the family unit. Men and women wore the same kind of clothes. They didn't want a distinction between the sexes. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know, oh, we're all equal. Well, actually, yeah, we should all have equal opportunities, but we are different. Men and women are different. Men and women are physically different. And it's like, no, women are different, not the same. Women should have the same rights to do anything. No, well, there's a disadvantage. Women don't have the muscle strength that men have and the speed and the agility. So no, there are differences, and you're not allowed to say that anymore. No, women and men are equal. That's it.
Right.
So there's societal, that's cultural
problems.
That's all
part of the feminist push, right?
Yeah, the feminist
push. Started off great. Equal rights for everyone. Yes, of course.
Absolutely.
But it kept going and going. And then this idea that gender is a social construct.
Yeah.
It's been pushed by a few people, but it was really pushed and is still pushed by feminism. So now you have 95% of the feminists in the world pushing trans ideology. Women destroying their own rights. You have the radical feminists, the type who have been successful in England in undoing some of this work, but they're a tiny minority of the overall feminists. If you go to any university campus in the United States, for example, there are all these intersectional feminists who are all about disrupting whatever power structures, because basically anything that's been more successful than any other group is bad. This is just communism. But, you know, it's, they believe that the world is systemically oppressive based on your race, your sex, your gender, your financial status, and all those power structures need to be destroyed. And it's the same thing with this. Cis heteronormativity, they call it. You know, being a straight person, well, you're part of the power group. You're part of the oppressors. And so these kids growing up, well, they don't want to be part of the oppressive group. That's no fun. It's cool to be the oppressed now. That's what gets you special attention. So like when I'm in Boston a year ago for a protest I held because of some news I broke at the children's hospital there, I ended up speaking with, it was the day they unveiled the Martin Luther King statue, actually, this very bad looking statue. They don't have heads or anything. But this young white woman was giving me a hard time, as they tend to do. And then this black woman, a mom of six kids, came along to defend me. And I just let them talk it out. This black woman told me that in Boston, she was giving a ride to school to her 11-year-old neighbor along with her own daughter. And they agreed that all the girls in the school say they're lesbians now. We're talking about middle schoolers.
Wow.
Half of them are trans or non-binary or whatever. They all have to have a special identity. I've talked to a lot of high school kids. They just come up to me. I don't approach them, but they come up to me sometimes. And this is the case in school after school after school. And we see this in statistics. Gen Z, 20% of them now are gay or trans. Obviously, these numbers make no sense. These are not real numbers, but this is fashionable. So yes, in addition to what you're talking about, things with diet and all that, and there's absolutely problems there. The testosterone in our system is down 50% in the last 5 decades or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that's down to diet and obesity as well.
Yep.
Lowers testosterone levels. But yes, the food we eat and everything we consume, there's a lot of junk in there.
I forgot to mention that.
I would attribute that to the trans movement too much, because this is mostly a social contagion affecting girls, whereas it used to be almost boys.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's probably a contributing factor to that as well.
No, it's a very small one. And I forgot to mention the obesity thing. You know, if you look at people who are grossly obese, the men who are grossly obese look very much like the grossly obese women. The men have man boobies, you know, and, you know, get that large rotund body, and women, they start getting hairy and they look just like the guys. And, you know, the problem is obesity is not good. It's really bad and people do not appreciate it. But again, you know, you can't talk about obesity because that's fat shaming.
Right.
Everything has just gone back to front. And right. Especially, you know, the feminist movement, it was all good. Look, I'm a dad of two young girls. I'm married to a strong woman. I love my wife,
mm-hmm.
because not because she's like, you know, meek and, you know, subservient to me, but, you know, she's my counter. I love her, and she's a strong woman, and she's bringing up three wonderful children. She goes out and works. She is very womanly. You know, she's not a man. She's not pretending to be a man, and she appreciates the difference between men and women. But I want my daughter to have opportunities. I don't want them to be denied things just because they're a girl. But I also don't want them to be treated like men, because they're not.
Right.
But what I really struggle with, the irony, is these feminists who are meant to be defending women's rights are now defending grown-up men going into little girls' toilets, or, you know, women's sports having men who have still got penises swimming against them. And it's like, do you not care about your women? Like, why are you allowing this to happen? Like, and they're the ones fighting against you and saying, oh, you're... So, for example, the person that referred me to the licensing board, she's a woman.
Yeah.
She's the one angry with me for being transphobic. And I'm the one saying, no, we need to protect our kids. We need to protect our women. So I, you know, when I was operating, I remember one of my scrub nurses going, oh, I love operating with you. It's so much fun. I can't, you know, stand the next list that's coming on after you. I was like, oh, who is it? She was like, it's not who, because quite often surgeons can be quite difficult, very arrogant, very rude. And she was like, no, it's not that. She goes, it's what? And I went, what do you mean? She goes, oh, we do all this trans surgery now. I was like, really? This is in the private hospital. She went, oh, God, yes. It's honestly, Ahmed, it's barbaric. They make it up as they go along.
Yeah,
there are so many complications. They keep having to come back. They make these artificial penises, or they chop off the penis, and the tubes all get, you know, misconnected. So they're leaking. They don't have flow properly. They're weeing out of two or three holes.
Fistulas.
Yeah, exactly. There's a medical term. I was trying to avoid that.
Yeah.
But you've got abnormal connections between the back passage and the front passage. They're spraying all over the place. They keep getting infections. The wounds keep breaking down. The grafts keep breaking down. And they keep coming back to surgery. And she goes, it's just awful. I just feel like we're we're mutilating these kids. But you know, the surgeons don't care because they make so much money out of it. They make so much money. And the hospitals don't care because they make so much money out of it. And I'm listening to all this and I'm just in shock. You know, I just stopped. I downed tools and just was like, are you serious? Because if I did this butchery, I would expect my license to be taken away. But, you know, I just call out the nonsense and they're destroying me. And these surgeons and doctors and anesthetists and nurses and hospital managers are doing this. And no one is saying anything. I'm like, what the hell?
Why do you think they do that? Why do you think surgeons do this and don't think anything of it? I've had this theory that, like in any job, you do something over and over and over again, and it just becomes your job. And for surgery, I'm sure the first time you cut into somebody, this was a very nerve-wracking experience, and it's the first time you've ever done it. And my gosh, you want to be so careful because this is the person's body. But then by the thousandth surgery, it's just, you've seen this so many times, you can do it with your eyes closed. Are they losing their humanity? Are they losing their touch with the...
Yeah, I think they have. I think it's multifactorial again. I think one, that there's major incentive. You know, people need to understand that doctors are human. And I think, again, you know, part of the problem, multifactorial, part of the problem is we put doctors on the pedestal. Mm-hmm. You know, ever since that Flexner report and the mainstreaming of medicine, you know, we've put doctors, we've deliberately created this massive persona, and we, you know, we worship them, the white coat, the stethoscope, and you know, we don't question them. Oh my god, they're a doctor, they're amazing. Oh my god, it's like a god. That's a major problem that we've got in the society. We shouldn't be doing that, because you then give all your power and responsibility to them, and that's not, you should meet them as an equal, and you should never give away your personal responsibility or those of your loved ones and their health and your health to other people. Especially when they may profit from it. So we need to stop that. So doctors, they're financially driven. A lot of people don't get that. They think they're there to help them. Yeah, absolutely. Most people go into the medical school system to help others, but the system kind of drums that out of you. You are come out with massive amounts of debt. You are expected to live a certain lifestyle. And here in the UK, we don't earn anything like America, but even America has been dropping the amount that they get paid, the remuneration from the insurance companies. The standard of living has dropped. You know what it's like. Your parents in the 80s were so much wealthier than what we are now. You know, life is tough for everyone in the West. You know, quality of living has gone down. You know, we are not enjoying what our parents had. And we look back, remember, at the 80s and think, why can our parents just come home with that big VHS or the latest microwave or, you know, with the latest gadget and have a nice car? And, you know, it was only dad working, and now dad and mom have to work, and we can't do anything. We can't buy anything like that. We have to think about things. So doctors are like, I need to maintain my standard of living. I'm a doctor, for goodness sake. And I need to pay the bills. I need to pay my debt off. And they will do things that will make money. And they will do things that will not jeopardize their license, because they can only do medicine. I had a colleague say to me, Ahmed, you're so lucky. You know, you've got this podcast you can at least fall back on. If I speak up and they do what...
I think there's a ton of money in podcasts. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And, maybe eventually.
One day. And this guy goes, but you know, if I stop doing surgery, what am I going to do? And that's a fear that a lot of doctors have. Like they think there's nothing else they can fall back to. And they've worked so hard. Remember, the way it's engineered, it's like this holy grail they're working towards. They've got their medical license, their degree, their profession, and they've got they become the attending or the consultant. You're asking them to just give it away? Like, it's Indiana Jones. Remember Indiana Jones? He goes through all the obstacles and the rolling ball and the spike, and he gets the treasure. And then you're saying, now give it away?
Like, but they don't have to give it away. They could just not do these surgeries.
Exactly. But if they don't do these surgeries, then they get questioned why. And then they'll be like, are you transphobic? Are you the blah, blah, blah? But anyway, they get paid a lot of money as well, is what I'm trying to say. A lot of money. And then the thing is, then if you do it so that, you know, the child psychologist says it in very, you know, medical terms. Oh, yes, this person's got gender dysphoria and they're suffering. And we've done a scoring system and the grading and they fit the criteria and blah, blah, blah. And it's all clinical. And there's reports and records and summaries and checklists and protocols and guidelines. Suddenly, you're just following orders. You're just doing your job. You know, and then on the other flip side, there's these horrible transphobic, conspiratorial anti-vaxxers and Putin lovers. No, you don't want to be one of those. I'm liberal. I'm a good person. You know, I've got a rainbow flag on my bio. I care. And this is what I mean, a cultural thing of
this messaging
it's a messaging. You know, virtue signaling is the laziest form of doing good. I want to belong. Look at me. I'm virtue signaling. So I want to belong to all my friends and all my community. What a nice person I am. I'm going along with it. And then when you have this patient on the operating table, it's so clinical. You know, everything's draped up. You only see a small part of the body. It just becomes a piece of meat. And then I'm giving you the surgeon mindset. You convince yourself of how scientific and amazing you are. Because you know what? You're drawing the lines in the body. You're incising. You need to think about the anatomy and the nerves. Let's move this flap and rotate it. And you know, you're teaching other people maybe. And like, oh, yeah, I'm just doing a rotational flap. And here we've got the pedicle. We need to make sure the blood vessels are preserved. So you're doing all this scientific stuff and talking technical manner to make it sound like, you know what, you're doing a great thing. But it's like the emperor without any clothes. Everyone's going along with it. And I'm the kid. He points a finger and goes, you guys are fucking crazy. You're just mutilating that child. What are you doing? Now, everybody at that point goes, the emperor's got no clothes. Oh my God, we're taking part in this. Oh my God, I look really stupid. I actually am really bad for doing this. I either accept that and can't live with myself, or I scream at this person and tell them they're a bad person. And I get rid of their job and I shut them up. And a lot of people choose the latter.
That's a really, really powerful insight. It's interesting to me when you're telling that. And it's great to hear from you. I mean, I know this is kind of common sense stuff, but it's interesting how the surgeons, they don't ever talk to these patients. They just come into the room and now they're doing their next procedure. And that takes the humanity away from this.
Yeah.
You don't know this kid or this young adult. You have no idea what's gone in their life. You don't know if they were raped for 3 years when they were 10, 11, and 12 years old, which started a downward spiral in their life where they just wanted to escape their sex, which is the case for so many of these kids. It's just totally dehumanizing the way the whole system works. That, yeah, they're now a piece of meat and you're going to do this scientific procedure and you're going to coach these interns on how to do it or whatever. Yeah, the whole system is just inhuman.
So this is what I mean by multifactorial. So one of my surgeons, when I was training right early on, he said to me, Ahmed, when you're a surgeon, what you understand is right at your stage, you just want to operate on everything. You just want to operate. And I used to be, you know, I remember I would go home and I'd phone up the on-call doctor and go, is there an appendix? And they'd be like, you're off. It's your day off. What the hell are you doing? I'd be like, I want to operate on the appendix. Because the more you did, the better you got at it. So I would come in at 11 o'clock at night to operate on an appendix. I'm not saying I would operate on people who didn't need their appendix. These are people, you know, it's not like I'm going out looking for people to just slash open. So people who came in with appendicitis, I would come in on my days off, on my weekends off to do the numbers and get my operating up. But one of my consultants said to me, Ahmed, look, at the beginning, you want to operate on everything, but a really good surgeon knows when to operate and when not to operate and which operation they should do on the correct patient at the right time. And your real skill as a surgeon is decision-making. And he said, and being autonomous. Now, there's a drive, Ahmed, for managers to strip that away from you, to make you an automaton, where you are then going to become a technician. So you will no longer be a consultant surgeon. You will become a technician surgeon. They will dictate to you what operations you do and when. There will be guidelines and protocols created by managers and insurance companies or in the NHS system or whatever, because it's all managed healthcare. And this idea that you have private and state social medical care is, and it's differing, is nonsensical. Because basically it's wealth extraction through different means. So in America and here in the UK, if you're private, you pay through insurance. But in the NHS, the government pays through taxation. But the end result is the same. What you get really is the same. And maybe things are a bit quicker in the private sector, but the way the mindset of the doctors is the same. It's very same. And what has happened is managers have taken away that autonomy of doctors and put them into straitjackets. And they then, so they basically, like you just said, they don't know the patient. They don't know the history. They haven't followed them up for years. They are now just technicians. They are told, here's a patient, take off their penis or whatever. And that's it. And they go, okay. And they just now do that. And part of the problem is that medicine has allowed this. Surgeons have allowed this. The profession has allowed this. And we've created now an army of technicians, not free thinking surgeons. And like I said, it's not just one thing. It's the financial incentive, the cultural incentive, the social incentive, so many things. And that's why unraveling this isn't just a simple case of, oh, tell people this is bad. We need to like restructure the whole medical system, our cultural system, a massive, basically all the things that have been done to us, we need to undo. And if we don't understand every facet of it, it's going to fail or it's going to come back, is what I'm trying to say.
That goes for a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
You know, when you start off a business, for example, you're one person or maybe a partner, you're free, you can create, you can do whatever you want. And then over time, administrative rules and regulations pile up. As countries now that are hundreds of years old, of course, England is much older than us here in North America, but laws have been building up on top of laws, regulations on top of regulations. Whereas now, you know, 100 years ago, you could build a house in a couple of months. Now you have to get approval for this. It takes forever. And every industry is just a mess. I guess it's how empires rise and fall. They just start to buckle under their own weight. And we've got people at the helm of many institutions trying to hasten that fall for sure. But what do we do to stop this slide that we're in? Because the West is in a big slide.
Yeah, it's funny. So I was speaking to someone called Alan Stevens yesterday on the podcast, and it was about libertarian values and exactly what he just said. He said, you know, the reason why North America was so successful was all the people in Europe were being, you know, persecuted by their monarchies, you know, really authoritarian regimes. You couldn't go swimming. You couldn't do this. You couldn't go hunting. You can't practice this religion, blah, blah, blah. They all fled to North America because the land of the free, literally. Free. Like, it was very libertarian. It was a lot of territories. You just did what you wanted to do. The government had very small footprint. Like, the government did not impact the average person's life. There was no tax regulations. And he gave the example, if you could just get a plot of land and you could build a house. You didn't need a planning permission. You didn't need to run it by anybody. You could build it. You could tear it down. You could do what you like. You know, and the law of the land was, you know, don't harm anyone else. Don't steal from someone else and don't take their life or don't do them any harm. And if there was, there would be justice. And that was an incentive not to do that. And, you know, I'm not saying everything was a peach, and I'm not saying there weren't scam artists and con artists and robbers and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, things were much simpler. You didn't need to follow all these rules and laws. And, you know, one of the things Alan said was that if he got into power, the first thing he would do is like cancel all legislation, all laws, just cancel them all. Because it's all garbage, layers and layers and layers of grime. But the thing
look what Javier Milei has done down in Argentina.
Yep. Yep.
There's this famous video of him on a whiteboard going to all the different departments, throwing that one away, that one away, throw that one away, throw that one away, do away with them all. And he's basically done it. They just turned their first budget surplus. And that was inconceivable.
Yeah.
Like, the US has $35 trillion in debt now, I think, and a $2 trillion deficit every year. I was a financial advisor starting in 2001. The debt was a few trillion dollars. And I remember watching the austerity movements in Iceland and Portugal. I think it was Italy going through problems. But they had these massive debt crises where they were looking at, you know, national bankruptcy, and they had to get bailed out or take on these extreme measures. Ireland was maybe another one. And no one thought that that could happen over here. But this is essentially happening to the greatest economy in the world, which affects all the other economies. And we just keep going full steam ahead. So yeah, we need more Javier Milei's in power for sure. We need another revolution, essentially. The American Revolution, where they left the king, that resulted in the most prosperous nation on earth. Because like you said, it was about freedom. It was about liberty, which the left now considers the word liberty to be a dog whistle for fascism.
Yeah.
But we need more liberty. That's why capitalism is so successful, because capitalism at its core is just freedom to achieve. That's all it is. It's you give a person an idea and they can run with it. They can work hard. They can achieve. They can hire people. They can do whatever they want. Next thing you know, they got a $1 billion company because they worked hard and they were smart, or a $1 million company. But we don't have that going on anymore. So I think we need a revolution in all our political systems.
I don't think we've had that for a very long time, because what we actually have isn't old school communist, fascist, whatever. What we've got is the left, you know, population in bed with corporations. And, you know, we are now capitalist capitalism doesn't exist. It's this corporate fascist thing where you've got governments and corporations blending together. And whether you go left or right, it all comes back to totalitarianism. You know, that's what we've got. We've got this weird socialist ideology in bed with greedy, mercantile, predatory, capitalist corporations. And, you know, there's big bucks in puberty blockers, big bucks in surgery, big bucks for these private hospitals. From a social engineering point of view, you're destroying families, you're stopping reproduction. So there's a lot of people who are, but do believe in the depopulation agenda. I mean, you just need to listen to Dennis Meadows. He wrote this book, Limits to the Growth. And
there's nothing to believe in. I mean, they talk about it out loud.
Yeah, they talk about it out loud.
No, I don't think the trans agenda is a huge contributor to that, because it's just the numbers just aren't big enough on a percentage basis to really.
Right now, it's not.
Dent.
But right now, it's not.
Obviously, they want to depopulate the planet. They talk about it all the time.
But I mean, right now, it's not. But I mean, the number of people I'm meeting now is crazy. You know, and it started off, I don't know about you, but I know a few people, and it started off a few years ago, oh, you know what, I'm non-binary, or I'm bisexual. Then it was, I'm non-binary. Then it's, I'm asexual. Now I'm the opposite sex. And I've seen the transition, and all these people that I know they had problems in the past. I know they self-harmed as a child and a kid. I know they had anxiety and depression as a young adult. And a lot of these people now, you know, they think that by changing themselves, all their problems will go away. And whether you're a child or an adult or young adult, I would say, actually, no, the problems aren't going to change if you take puberty blockers or have surgery and call yourself a different sex. All those problems are still going to be there. And actually, things might get even worse.
Of course.
Because when you realize that you've made all these changes and sacrifices and mutilated yourself, and it actually doesn't make you feel better, doesn't make you feel happier. For some, that's really quite bad. And that's why suicide is a problem afterwards.
Right. But you know what will happen if you ask them if they're happier? They'll all say yes.
I know.
Go walk into any cult and ask every person in there, are you happy? They're all going to say, yeah, this is the greatest thing I've ever done. And so that's why these self-selected surveys, these online surveys, these reports from the Trevor Project or whoever, they're all completely useless, because these people will all say they're happy as they're crying and yelling at you. I experienced this myself on the street at university campuses. They'll come up to me and these people are a mess. They're a mess. They look like they're on some sort of drug and they're physically shaking some of the time, because they're so amped up that I dare to say children cannot consent to puberty blockers, which is this sign that I'm wearing. And they'll just go raging immediately, or they'll start crying. And I'm to believe that this person is so happy now because they found their true self? Of course they're not. They're the biggest mess on the university campus. But if you ask them in a survey, are they happier? Yes. And I don't want to kill myself anymore is what they'll say. But that's not true.
That's not true. So what is your, how many countries have you been to now?
Six, I guess. Canada, a lot. I couldn't leave Canada for the first year and a half because of COVID. because of the science, of course. So ridiculous. I was in Montreal one day in March of 2021. They had a curfew of 8 p.m. because you've got to get indoors by 8, I guess, because that's when COVID starts to spread.
Oh,
where
wow.
It spreads even faster. It's so embarrassing. It's just so embarrassing how dumb humans can be. But I ended up getting my arm broken that day. It's an interesting story. Antifa jumped me on the street. I got my arm broken. I went to the hospital. They put me in a cast. And then I was waiting for a cab at about 1 a.m. and no cab would come. So in Montreal in March of 2021, I walked about 1.5 miles back to my car in a snowstorm in a ghost town, Ahmed. Not a person to be seen in this spectacular city anywhere. It's so crazy. And I didn't even have my jacket on because it had been squirted with mustard and someone took it to clean it. And I couldn't get my arm in my sleeve. So it was kind of inducted in my shirt. And I'm in this snowstorm in this ghost town of Montreal. Just a total surreal moment. But yeah, anyway, I got sidetracked there. I traveled Canada for about 1.5 years. Then I started going into the States. I've been in the UK a couple times. I'll probably be coming back there in June or July.
Me up.
And I'm going to Australia as well.
I'm just outside London.
Australia tonight.
You're going to Australia tonight?
Yes.
Long flight.
Yes, it's going to be wild. I've caused a lot of national news down there lately because their e-safety commissioner, their censorship czar, ordered one of my tweets to be taken down. I wrote this tweet about an Australian citizen. I don't know if I even knew that at the time. But this woman named Teddy Cook, who thinks she's a man, she's been appointed to the World Health Organization panel of 20 experts tasked with writing healthcare policy for trans-identified people.
Oh, for God's sake.
Teddy Cook posts pictures of bondage. She posts pictures of her mutilated body. She posts pictures of bestiality.
No way.
And the Daily Mail in the UK wrote an article about her. And at the time, on the cover photo, they had this picture she posted of a dog having sex with a man, along with this topless picture of her.
On Twitter.
That was the cover of their digital article, yes, on the Daily Mail. She also has said that trans-identified people have better sex when they're high on illicit drugs. So this is a deeply unwell individual. Promoting illegal activity as well, bestiality. Appointed to this UN panel, this WHO panel. And so I wrote that she was a woman because she is. And I said that something like
are you talking about this person?
Yeah, that's not my tweet, but that's her. And I wrote something like, people who belong in psychiatric wards are writing healthcare policy for people who belong in psychiatric wards.
Well, that's a good point. That's an excellent tweet. Well done.
I mean, it's true.
I wish I came up with that.
These are psychiatric conditions. Where do we treat those? Psychiatric wards. So not the nicest thing I've ever said, but this person's posting pictures of dogs having sex with men. So anyway, the e-safety commissioner in Australia ordered my tweet to be taken down or Twitter could face a $782,000 fine. So they've geo-blocked that tweet in Australia. Australians can't see it, but it's still up. Elon now is suing them because he's challenging that. He's basically kind of suing. I mean, he's suing for free speech, but he's suing about them taking down my tweet. I'm also filing an appeal. I've already appealed this. Just today, I got notice that some documents I requested through the Freedom of Information Act. I'm working with the Free Speech Union in Australia. They won't release them for another 30 days. They need to talk to a third party who's involved. So I assume that's Teddy Cook. And they're just stalling. But I'm going to take this as far as I can. And I'll represent myself. And maybe I'll get a hearing where I get to ask Teddy Cook some questions. I don't expect them to change their mind. But this e-safety office down in Australia, they boast that they have the world's first e-safety commissioner to keep people safe online. And what are they doing? They're ordering that this attack from last week, the stabbing attack on that Christian pastor, Mar Mari.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're ordering all those videos to be taken down off the internet. Doesn't matter what country you're in. They all have to come down. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because they don't like that it was a Muslim attacking a Christian. If it was the other way around, they wouldn't be saying this. Because these leftist politicians are appealing to their Muslim lobby. That's all this is. It all comes back to politics. They also want the attack from the mall taken down. But where does this stop? And why does an unelected official get to determine what is appropriate content or not? Before my tweet was ordered taken down, the only other one that had been ordered taken down recently, it was about a year before, it was about men breastfeeding. A woman in Australia wrote a tweet about how gross it is that men breastfeed. They ordered that tweet to be taken down. So the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, is a former Twitter employee that Elon fired. She's got a vendetta for sure. And she's a trans activist. And you have this unelected bureaucrat getting paid $450,000 a year determining what is permissible online or not. And now just today, the Prime Minister, Albo Albanese, was complaining about memes. Nasty memes where people are putting his face on other people's bodies and stuff. And he doesn't think that should be on the internet either. So now that he's getting absolutely roasted. These guys are out of control. So anyway, I'm going there. I had this trip planned for a long time before all this drama. But it's going to be wild. I got to be careful. I got to have security and stuff in some of these places I'm going because it's going to be crazy.
You need to be careful. You need to be careful. You need to be very, very careful.
Yeah, Antifa in Melbourne is out of control. Even the Nazis come out there. They went out to a rally that Posey Parker was at when she was there a year ago. And a friend of mine who's a member of parliament down there, her name's Moira Deeming. I met her in London at the ARC conference this last November. She was basically kicked out of her own party and labeled a Nazi because she supported Kelly J. Keene. Even though these Nazis that came out had nothing to do with them. They weren't part of them. They were separate, but they were doing their stupid Nazi salutes. And so just a virtue signal, these politicians try to say that, oh, this women's rights rally is supported by Nazis. We don't
want to. I even wonder if that's a setup. I even wonder if they're legit or not. Because, you know, you just never know anything.
Yeah, you never know for sure. I think there are some legitimate Nazis down there. I mean, we've seen such a rise in anti-Semitism all across the world. They're getting more emboldened. But, yeah, I want nothing to do with them. And, of course, I would denounce them. But it's going to be interesting because I fully expect if I do something out on the street or at universities, I expect all these factions to come out.
So how are you getting funded to, like, travel all around the world and do this? Yeah, you know, I mean, are you doing, like, self-crowdfunding or?
Yeah, it's just, I lost money for a long time. I get like $30 and $50 donations through my website. Once in a while on Twitter or X, at the end of my thread, if I've been doing work outside or whatever, at the end of a conversation, because I post my conversations online, sometimes I'll just post my donate button underneath and say, if you want to support my work, I appreciate your help. And honestly, that brings in enough to get me by.
And do you think this is actually making a difference? Do you think you going around with a billboard and, you know, do you go to certain cities? I mean, how do you do
it? I know it makes a difference. I know it's made a massive difference. It's not just the stuff I do outside. You know, I've broken big stories and all sorts of stuff. But I reach a couple million people every day, and I'm working with politicians around the globe. I was instrumental in the legislation in Oklahoma, for example. I've testified at other state legislatures. I broke one of the biggest stories in late 2022 about Boston Children's Hospital, which, I mean, really, I just kind of stumbled upon this video that they'd produced from their gender clinic about gender-affirming hysterectomies. This was on their own YouTube channel.
Oh, God.
And so I tweeted out this video where you've got this young woman with this perky, fun music playing in the background talking about how they do gender-affirming hysterectomies at the Children's Hospital. And sometimes they cut out your ovaries as well. That's not technically a hysterectomy. That's a bilateral oophorectomy, which isn't always needed to be done, she says, to this happy music. And anyway, it's just incredible. They're doing gender-affirming hysterectomies. They're sending teenage girls into menopause and destroying their chances of ever producing estrogen again. They're doing this to teenage girls. So that's insane. I tweeted out this video. It started to take off. I thought I'd better record it because they're getting a lot of heat. And so I did, just on my phone. That night, they deleted it from their YouTube channel. I recorded 40 more videos they produced. They deleted them all. Why are they deleting their work if this is science,
right?
Truth, and love? And so I tweeted out all these videos. They went extremely viral. Matt Walsh and Libs of TikTok retweeted them. And then, unfortunately, some idiots were calling in bomb threats to Boston Children's Hospital. This was a big national story. But these videos really kicked off the conservative movement in the U.S. looking into this, because conservatives weren't talking about this before. And there are 80 million of them in the U.S. So 80 million voters, conservative. And I knew I needed to wake them up. So this really started off a chain reaction of conservative podcasters and media looking into other gender clinics. And once people learned what was going on, I knew they would never unlearn it. And for every 1,000 people I talk to, 2 or 3 are going to become fighters themselves. And that's exactly what's happening. So whereas no one was talking about this a couple of years ago, it's the number one cultural issue on the airwaves every single day. And 24 states have put a stop to it. All the conservative states, of course. But yeah, I've gotten other groups going, like Moms for Liberty. They didn't know anything about this. I ran into the co-founder of Moms for Liberty one night in a Twitter space. Yeah. Tiffany Justice, she's one of my best friends now. So I taught her all about this. And now through her network, that's 130,000 moms who are fighting this. So
can I ask you something?
I work with various conservative organizations. And yeah, for sure, I've had a huge impact.
What does TERF stand for again?
Well, Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist is what it stands for. It was really targeted at the radical feminists who were among the first talking about this. They really only talked about their own issues. They talked mostly, almost exclusively about men coming into their spaces, men coming into their sports, men coming into their prisons, which they should talk about it. A handful of them were talking about the child issue. And still to this day, their focus is more on their own rights, which is fine. But today, there's so many people talking about the child issue, which is honestly a bigger issue because kids have no means to defend themselves and we're harming them physically for life. We're sterilizing and turning children into anorgasmic lifelong pharmaceutical patients just because they have autism or they're going to grow up to be gay. I mean, this is the biggest child abuse scandal in modern history. And I see the French Senate has just mirrored those words of mine very recently, saying the exact same thing. So all over the world, people are finally waking up.
But there is also this mental health epidemic, you know, and it was pushed forward big time by COVID. All these kids were locked up, left and, you know, not able to go to school, not able to play with their friends. There was the fear porn, you're going to kill granny. So there's this massive explosion already. And we've had a mental health problem for the last 20 years plus. You know, like you said, kids aren't playing outside in the sun, in nature. They're locked up with their screens. Social media, I think, has been really bad. You know,
it's the worst thing ever. It's the worst thing ever for kids' mental health.
Right? We've created this narcissistic society. Look at me. Look at me. Look how beautiful I am. And other people.
Or look how beautiful that person is, and I'm not that beautiful.
Exactly. That's what's going to come to. And then, yeah. And then they go, oh my goodness, but I can't be as beautiful as that person. And they, you know, and all the filters and makeup and all the garbage. And the persons look in the mirror and go, oh my God, I want to be like that person on the Instagram. And I'm not like them. I'm horrible. I'm disgusting. And sometimes what I've seen is they actually embrace the opposite then. So they kind of like, instead of trying to, you know, just they try and embrace ugly and scar themselves and tattoo themselves and make funny faces on the screen and stick at the tongue and, you know, just weird, because they just think, well, I can't be that, so I'm gonna go join this group of other people who think like me. Anyway, it's just really bad for your self-esteem, and so you're creating this whole generation of kids who don't love themselves, who have very low self-esteem, who are very insecure. And I think, you know, yes, a lot of them are, you know, gay, but some of them aren't. Some of them are just confused.
We've had this 4,000% increase. Depends on the time span you look at, but we've had this massive increase in kids apparently with gender dysphoria. It's not gender dysphoria, by the way. It's just distress. But anyway, you can't have an increase that big and say, oh, they're all gay.
That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't work that way.
Historically, yes. But now this absolute epidemic is just poor, sad kids.
That's right.
And you know, you know, when you're talking about the screens, and oh my God, you know, on the Saturday morning every fortnight, my wife and I go and do a jiu-jitsu class together, and the kids are waiting outside, and they take their coloring in books and their reading books and chess boards, and they've got little snacks, and they're sitting there chatting amongst themselves. Occasionally they argue, but they're just getting on well and playing. There'll be another 6 to 8, maybe 10 kids sitting on sofas, tables, chairs, and they're all just on their screens. all on their iPads, all on their iPhones. None of these kids are talking to each other. None of these kids are looking up. And I always walk out and I feel so uncomfortable. I get kind of like goosebumps and I look around and go, what the hell? This is a future generation. Apart from my three little kids yapping away, chatting like any kids would be doing over hundreds of years, you've now got these like cyborg robots.
Well, you bring me to the next thing I was just going to talk about, cyborg. Elon Musk talks about this a lot, and I like Elon Musk. He's doing great things for freedom of speech. But Neuralink scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
Because Elon will tell you that with this thing, we're already cybernetic organisms. It's just the download rate is very slow. The upload download rate is very slow because we have to type things in. We have to read it. We process it slowly. That chip they put in your brain, and then eventually maybe take off your skull cap and attach electrodes to all parts of your brain. Like he says, it'll be like the Matrix. You'll be able to download Kung Fu. You want to know about something? Zing. You've just learned about it because it's instantaneous response back and forth. And that's the only way we can keep up with the AI. And so this technology advances at an exponential rate. So their first patient with the Neuralink chip in his head tweeted the other day just by thinking. And this is just going to keep going and going and going. So we have no idea what life is going to look like in 100 years. Never mind, 20 years. We have no idea. So this is such a crucial point in humanity because psychologically, we're the same as the people who lived in caves. And we're not ready for this technology. And it's scary, to be honest. It's completely frightening.
You can't stop
it. You can say this person can't develop it, that person can't develop it. They'll go to another jurisdiction and they'll develop it there. Someone in China will develop it, or Thailand, or Russia, or wherever. You cannot stop technological advancement. And it's just super frightening.
It is super frightening. I didn't know they had done that chip and tweet from thinking, oh my God, that's very scary.
And because he wants to be able to like, it'll be able to fix paralysis and things like that. That's all great. But ultimately, we're going to be connected to the internet just with our brains.
Mate, I think there is a big drive. I think a lot of what we saw with the COVID and mRNA gene editing thing was to this whole transhumanism business. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't actually like it. I'm on the fence with Elon. Some things he says are great. Some things I'm quite worried about. I mean, I just hate the narrative. Joe Rogan keeps talking about it like it's going to happen. Maybe he's right. Maybe it's going to happen. But I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's very dangerous.
No, you know, we're not. We're not ready for this. It's not a good thing.
But the thing is, it'll be couched.
That's not a good thing.
It'll be couched in a way that's like, hey, this is great. You know, you can think faster and connect easier, and you won't have to carry a phone anymore, and blah blah blah. And there'll be lots of pluses to it. But guess what? You can also be controlled.
Yes, you'll also be connected to everyone else. By the way,
yeah, there'll be no privacy.
We're connected to everyone else right now. Well, we'll be connected to everyone else instantaneously. I don't know if you watched Star Trek: The Next Generation when you were a kid.
Dude, come on, man.
But they fought the Borg. This is the Borg.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where they're all connected to each other.
But remember the key thing about the Borg? It was the collective.
That's right.
And what we're seeing now is we are seeing the Borg. We are seeing collectivism. And, you know, it's all about the greater good. And that's so anti-Western values, you know. We're not meant to be like that. We're meant to be individual rights. I don't even believe in human rights, Chris. I believe in individual rights. You know, it's my rights that trump everything. I've become such an anarchist liberalist. I don't even believe in democracy in the sense that just because the majority of people want something that I should do it. So the majority of people in the UK wanted the mandates and the vaccines. Does that mean I should roll up my sleeve and take it? No. It's my individual rights trump everything.
That's right. When it comes to body autonomy, absolutely. But yeah. The problem with the world today is all the media are run by leftists. They're all owned by leftists. And so they push their narratives and they indoctrinate entire civilization. And that's when democracy really starts to fail because there's not freedom of information and there's not freedom of speech. That's why what they're doing down in Australia is so dangerous right now, because no individual should be able to decide what I tweet. This isn't child porn. This is me with an opinion about a person who is going to write healthcare policy for children, a deeply unwell individual promoting bestiality and bondage and nudism and drugs and mutilation. And I can't say that. Australians aren't allowed to see that this is happening.
Does he actually have a Twitter account, or is he not on Twitter anymore?
So it's a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know if she has a Twitter account. I don't think so. I don't know about it anyway, but she has other social media.
So
I
that's she's not
made it all private though.
So she is biologically a woman.
Yes.
Teddy Cook.
Yeah. So she cut off her breasts. That's in the picture you saw there. Women tend to pass more than men because they grow beards, right? And our brain. Yeah. Don't compute. Yes. We just see a small person with a beard. And they have a deeper voice, of course. But this brings us to another point. Women pass better than men. The whole theory of puberty blockers, if I were to steel man the puberty blocker argument, this is what the leftists and the activists would say. They would say, well, we can't let this person go through puberty because they've gone through the wrong puberty, and then they will not be able to pass as well as an adult. So with the boys, they get deep voices, they get broad shoulders, they get bigger, they get a bigger jaw. They're going to have very great difficulty passing as a woman because they're also going to have facial hair and all that. With a woman, they don't have that problem. They just go on testosterone, now they grow a beard, they get a deep voice. And they can get a mastectomy, which they do at 13 years old anyway to these kids. They're cutting off the boobs of 12-year-olds in California. 12-year-old children have had their breasts cut off in California. There's a girl named Layla Jane who's suing right now. She was 13 years and 1 month old when they cut off her breasts at Kaiser Permanente. But anyway, this is a social contagion primarily affecting girls, and they're putting them on puberty blockers when they're 10 or 11. Why? They're going to pass just fine. Leave them alone.
Do you know
Let
what,
them grow up. If they want to do something as an adult, I still don't agree with it. And they shouldn't be doing this to 18 and 19-year-olds who have trauma and abuse and all this stuff.
But do you know what? It is a war on children.
Grow out of it.
It is a war on children. Well, I'll tell you why. Because basically, if you even look at what they do, the rainbow color. Rainbows were just children. Children loved rainbows. Why did they take the rainbow? They want to appeal to kids. And they, like, you know, the whole imagery, a lot of it is, you know, toys and this and that. They're really targeting the kids. It's kind of sick. Evil. It's evil.
If you're going to go after kids, of course you're going to do that. No, and these churches too. You don't see this in mosques. And last year we had these huge protests all across Canada with tons of the Muslims coming out to support us because they're not down with this. Now, October 7th, that's ruined all those coalitions. But anyway, these churches, like, I'm not really a spiritual person. I don't have a religion. But if Satan existed, of course he's going to use the churches to push this. So many of these churches now are advertising these rainbows and these trans colors. I was just in Virginia. No, I was just in Tennessee last week in Nashville. And this church I walked by on my way downtown is promoting the rainbow and the trans stuff. What?
I know.
Have you not read the Bible? The first book of the Bible, male and female, he created them?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, but you want to be kind to everybody? You're not kind when you tell people that they're born wrong and they need to be something they're not. You're the opposite of kind. You're a fool sending a very negative message to somebody that is really about self-hate. Oh, you're supposed to be something you're not? Yeah, you should hate yourself. You need to change your body to be yourself. What an abusive thing to teach someone. But that's what they're pushing and calling love.
This is what I mean by religions have all been captured. I mean, like, I think I follow a lot of Christ's teachings. I just don't call myself a Christian. But I know a lot of Christians who do not follow Christ's teachings. It's so bizarre, mate. We're in this really weird
environment. I'm with you. I follow Christ's teachings, but I don't call myself a Christian. But he had a ton of wisdom.
Yeah.
Whether you believe he's a God-man or not, that's a different conversation.
Absolutely. But the problem is there's a lot of people. Of
Christianity was great.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people going around calling themselves Christians, and they're not. And it's just... I'm so conflicted when it comes to religion because I think we need it like a bulwark. We need it to hold back against what I do see as satanic evil forces. And if you take away all the religions and faiths, well, you just have like one world government and satanic blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so, that's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. We're seeing what's happening. with the downfall of Christianity, the West was based on Judeo-Christian values. Christianity is based on Judeo values. Christ himself said nothing he says rebukes anything that's been said before.
Yeah, he was a Jew.
He's a Jew.
People but forget that.
That's
people
what forget. The Constitution of these Western nations was based on. Really Christian values. And it worked in helping to create a flourishing society. And then you get these protests in London with the 100,000 pro-Hamas people who are basically calling for genocide. And then you get the Antifa people joining in with them, the white people joining in with them, saying queers for Palestine. Yeah, you'll be thrown off a roof in half an hour.
So Chris, can I just say something? I will disagree with you slightly there. I was a Muslim and I know a lot of Muslims. Man, a lot of these people were not calling for genocide in Israel and killing of no. They're defending.
Well, I was are they saying when they say from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, and they're calling for Intifada revolution. What does that mean?
I think they want freedom. I don't think they want to kill all the Jews. 100% is not that. That's not the case. That's not the case. I do agree. The queers and everything joining in, it's just weird. And you're right. In a lot of Muslim countries, these queers would not be treated well at all. So it's this really weird hybrid lefty wing.
But I don't know. Dr. Malik, if I may push back one little bit.
Yeah.
Before Israel even responded to the October 7th attack. And I know this is not why we signed up to talk today.
Yeah, yeah.
We can make this quick. But before they even responded, in Gaza, on the streets, people were celebrating wildly.
Before they even what, sorry?
Before Israel even responded to the attacks of October 7th, it was nothing but celebrations.
Okay, so I don't know about that.
The celebrations in the West, too. It was okay. Celebrations in Canada and in England.
So I am not a Zionist. I do not believe in the Zionist construct. I believe that there should be a united Republic of Israel and Palestine, and all those people should just live together in peace and harmony. But you know, Israel was born out of occupation, mate. It was born out of taking other people's land. And those Palestinians...
In what year?
Those Palestinians
in
are...
In what year, though?
1947.
Yeah, well, so how many thousands of years do we want to go back?
Listen, absolutely, but if Germany...
Because they've been in that land for a long time. And they never did leave that land. But no, anyway, we're going to get off track.
We're going to go off track. This is where
they didn't just come there in the 1950s.
But let's just politely agree to disagree. I mean, I've studied.
All I'm saying is that people were celebrating the deaths of these Jews in all these Western nations.
I would argue that they were celebrating resistance and fighting back.
That's not resistance, and that's not fighting back. And they weren't occupied. There wasn't a single Jew in the Gaza Strip. Not one. Gaza elected Hamas, and they had that entire Gaza Strip to themselves. There wasn't one Jew there. Whereas tens of thousands of them came into Israel every day to work.
Mate, so
there are tons of Arabs living in Israel.
If you have a Warsaw ghetto,
in the legislature.
You're like saying having the Warsaw ghetto wasn't occupied by the Nazis because there's no Nazis in the Warsaw ghetto.
They weren't occupying it. They had no say over it whatsoever. They had no military authority over it whatsoever.
Chris.
It had borders.
No, Chris. They can't let anyone in or out without Israel saying. They don't have any airspace without
That's
Israel
not
saying.
True.
They can't
There's
go
also
fishing
a border with Egypt.
No, they can't go. They tell Egypt exactly who can go in and out.
People were coming into Israel every day. You can't come into Canada from the United States without Canadian authorities saying you're allowed in.
Have you seen the border?
I can't go into Australia without Australian authorities saying I can come in. What's the difference with Gaza?
Have you seen the border passes and how long people have to wait, and how long they have to go, and how?
Okay, but why should thousands have a right to come into Israel?
They're invited to work. Do you know their water, the electricity, everything is controlled by Israel, the airspace. They can't go fishing more than 1 mile out.
Right,
you know,
they should develop their... instead of building terrorist tunnels, hundreds of miles of terrorist tunnels, they should have used all the funding that they've gotten, the billions and billions of dollars, to build their own water facilities, to build their own electrical grid.
No,
they
what's
don't want to do that. They just want to kill all the Jews.
They're an open-air prison.
85% of Palestinians support Hamas.
They do not want to kill all the Jews. That's the biggest
85%
lie.
Of them support Hamas. And Hamas wants to kill every Jew. They want to destroy them.
Listen,
like
by the way,
Iranian revolutionary
I don't know where you're getting that number from, but the vast majority of people just want to live free. They don't want to be persecuted.
Well, they just had their own territory with out any interference from the Jews. And all they did with their governing authority of Hamas was build terrorist tunnels.
Chris, you're really mistaken if you think Gaza has no influence by the Jews and that Israel...
How are the Jews influencing Gaza? Please tell me.
So it's not Jews, it's Israeli government.
Yeah, and how are they influencing Gaza? What were they doing on a day-to-day basis? Because they were living their own lives. They elected their own people.
Their electricity, their water, their food, everything is at
Israel
the mercy
was providing
of
with
Israel.
All of them with all of that. Why don't they build their own electrical grid?
I think we need to stop this conversation because I think you...
Okay, we can edit all of this out, but why don't they build their own electrical grid?
I don't want to edit anything out, but they can't.
Don't bother then.
Their money...
But people say that the Jews are doing an occupation and the Jews are committing a genocide. If they wanted to commit a genocide, they would have killed them all a long time ago. They could kill them all tomorrow. They don't want to commit a genocide. They're doing everything they can to avoid civilian casualties, but Hamas are the ones committing war crimes by hiding behind shields of children and women. By hiding under daycares, by hiding under schools, by hiding under hospitals.
No, Chris, no.
Israel dropped leaflets out of the air saying, we're going to bomb this area. Please leave because we don't want to kill any innocents.
And then
and Hamas was killing people and stopping them from leaving the areas that were going to be attacked.
No, Chris, they weren't. This is all propaganda. They're bombing a small area, left, right, and center. 30,000 people have died.
It's all terrible. The point of this was...
No, if you look at the origin...
They went into Israel, they raped women, they killed babies, they burned down families alive, civilians, and then they all celebrated it in the streets. And they didn't just celebrate it in the streets of Gaza, they celebrated it in the streets all throughout the West.
So, can I ask you something? Do you know about 9/11? Do you believe the official narrative?
So, you tell me what you think the official narrative is. Are you going to blame this on Jews?
No. 9/11 apparently is a bunch of guys with box cutters destroying the 9/11 towers and, you know, towers just free falling after they've been hit by planes. Do you believe that?
So what, you think there was a controlled demolition?
I don't know what it was,
that's total conspiracy crazy talk.
No, it's not.
Ran into the buildings and the buildings fell down. They pancaked down.
So what happened to building number 7?
Building 7 was hit by debris, caught fire, had huge diesel generators in the basement. And I've done a big deep dive into this a long time ago, many, many years ago.
Okay.
And just yesterday or 2 days ago, Tucker Carlson was on with Joe Rogan. And they're both speculating, just asking questions though, right? They always do that. Oh, we're just asking questions. And basically they're saying, oh, it looks just like a controlled demolition. Well, no, it doesn't. Have you ever watched a controlled demolition? You see all the little pops, pop, 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 pop. You see the dust, the debris, pop, 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 blowing out the different levels. There's none of that at all.
Okay. So I think if you
do a deep dive into this, which I have done, but it was several years ago, all of this has been explained.
Okay. So
it's not a controlled demolition. And if it was a controlled demolition, when did they take all the weeks to set up all the dynamite in the building while everyone was working on everything?
Okay, that's it. If you're assuming it's a controlled demolition.
None of this makes any sense.
If you think it's a controlled demolition, there's a lot of evidence and thousands of engineers and architects who say this is not what we were taught it was and what we were told.
Yeah,
so what I'm saying is
nutty conspiracy theories out there. I'll give you that.
Well, then I'm one of them. So 9/11 is not what we were told. Okay. And I'm saying if they can lie to us with that, you need to understand that.
What was it?
No, Chris, you've spoken quite a lot.
No, you're putting out this postulate that it is not what we were told, but you can't just say that without saying what it was.
You're saying a lot of things, and let me speak. So basically, we are told that, you know, babies were raped and murdered in October the 7th. Where's the evidence? There is none.
No one's saying babies were raped. No one's saying that.
Babies were beheaded and women were raped. Can I just say, there was a lot of Israeli fire on the civilians in the kibbutz. The tanks were killing their own people and the Apache helicopters were killing their own people because there's a rule that you can't let anyone be kidnapped or captured. And, you know, if the Hamas is there or whatever, you need to kill them all. So what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of now information coming out from Israelis saying that it was our own friendly fire killing a lot of the people. The Hamas wanted to get hostages. They went to get hostages to trade their prisoners who have been taken without any, you know, justice being served, with no charges being made, people just being locked
up.
Wait. Children.
You're telling me Hamas just went there to take hostages and they didn't want to kill anybody?
That was a plan, that they wanted to take hostages.
Are you saying they didn't want to kill anybody?
No, they don't want to kill anybody. They wanted to get hostages.
Whoa,
and if
whoa,
there
whoa,
were
whoa,
people...
Whoa, whoa. Let me... Okay, a third time. You're telling me Hamas did not want to kill anybody when they invaded Israel.
My understanding is...
How do you
is,
explain all those dead bodies at the rave? Explain to me all the blood-soaked sheets in babies' cribs. This is disgusting, what I'm hearing right now.
Do you know we
totally
had...
disgusting, deranged, and delusional.
Chris, do you know the Israeli helicopters were shooting on their own people? Did you know that?
No, I don't. And I don't believe you because you're already spewing such total and complete nonsense. So I think we should probably end this talk. We had a nice talk all about the puberty blocker nonsense, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to these absurdities. When you claim that Hamas did not so want sad. To kill anybody in Israel, you have completely lost your mind.
You know what?
Thank you very much for the talk.
Chris, it'd be
Have
nice.
Have yourself a nice day.
I've listened to it. You're standing. Oh, for fuck's sake. Right. So now you know what I meant. It's such a shame because I really respect what Chris is doing with his activism work. And we were hitting it off so much. So. You know, we're two bald guys born in 1975 with two daughters who were brought up in cults. And, you know, just had a lot in common. And then it just suddenly went, pow. Like, what I didn't get a chance to say was, I'm no Hamas supporter. I'm no Israeli government supporter. Frankly, I'm no supporter of any government. Because they lied to us. They lied to us all the time. They have lied to us. They're lying to us now. And they'll lie to us tomorrow. And governments have tried to kill us in the past. They're still killing us now. And they'll try and kill us in the future. And as far as wars are concerned, they're all bankers' wars. And Hamas and Israel, I think they all serve the same masters. And the people that suffer are just the normal, ordinary citizens. Just innocent civilians, both sides. And I've talked about this multiple times on my podcast, and that's what I think I was trying to get through to Chris, that it's not that simple. What I really struggle with is, why is it that so many of us can see the lies that mainstream media are constantly spouting, whether it be COVID or climate change or whatever, nonsense wars like in Ukraine, Russia. But when it comes to Israel, and Palestine, suddenly people get polarized and want to take sides and get really triggered. And that's the whole point. Why mistrust mainstream media and the government up until that point? And then whatever they tell you, you can't believe. They're always trying to sow discord and division and have us fighting at each other. And we need to rise above that. We cannot hate our fellow man and woman. We need to hate. They're really evil people. Yes, innocent people died in Israel. Yes, innocent people are dying in Palestine. And those are the people that we need to care about. And we cannot fall into the trap of hatred and just, you know, fighting amongst each other. And I felt sad because I felt that Chris basically acted in a way like the same way the trans activists act. When you try and engage with them or have a debate with them, they get triggered, they get emotional, talk over you. They walk away. They want to shut you up. They want to censor you. They want to cancel you. Or they insult you. You're a transphobe. And here I am. I'm a terrorist sympathizer. And it's like, really? Like, really? Come on, man. So, yeah, I was a bit sad. Man, us humans, we're never going to fall out of this trap if we just keep fighting amongst each other and not recognize who the really evil people are. And they're at the top. And they control it, all the governments and all Hamas and Israel. Israel's no friend of the people of Israel. It's the same government that stuck experimental shots in their population. You know, we don't trust these political leaders. We don't trust the politicians. That's what I was trying to get through to Chris. Anyway, folks, I'm going to go lie down now. Bye-bye.